eternity. But now you're in a wonder run. I wonder what you're doing here. The flame no longer flickers. You're feeling just like a fool. You keep staring into your liquor.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. For thousands of years, wild blueberries have grown in Nova Scotia. Today, farmers manage many of these naturally occurring fields and harvest the fruit. But as the climate changes, the region's wild blueberry industry faces a range of problems. David Percival of Dalhousie University says blueberry fields usually bloom during a few weeks in spring. But this year, warmer temperatures caused many fields to bloom all at once. So pollinators like bees did not have much time to visit and fertilize all the flowers, a necessary step to produce berries.
Because the bloom was so compressed in a short period of time, we just couldn't get the number of visits and the adequate movement of pollen to give us a good crop.
Percival says as the climate warms, growers are also struggling to control more weeds in their fields. So he's working to help them adapt. For example, by conducting drone surveys that show which areas of a field should be targeted for weed control. He says he's motivated by the long history of some of these wild blueberry fields.
You almost feel as though there's this inherent responsibility, you know, to keep the plant healthy, keep it sustainable, and really pass it along to the next generation.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Hey, Peter, what are we talking about today?
Well, we're talking about the results of November 5th, the U.S. results, and also a bit of, I'm going to go back to the Lyndon Johnson administration with a bit of analysis of it. I might as well start there to begin with. Mm-hmm. Now, what happened was that?
Well, I guess we can start with, you know, we all know that November 5th, Donald Trump got elected again to be the 47th president of the United States. Okay. He was the 45th president. Now he's the 47th president.
I guess.
I don't know. Not the outcome, but I mean the vote itself in terms of the margin and stuff seems to have surprised almost everybody. That everybody's talking about how it's going to be down to the wire and super, super close, and then there's actually several percentage points between them, and he won rather bigger than everyone is expecting. But you want to start back with the...
I'm going to go back to Lyndon Johnson administration, because what happened was that they overspent, and Lyndon Johnson made a choice in 1968 not to raise taxation. Now, he was breaking with the Keynesian model, because the idea of the Keynesian model is that you, during bad times, you spend, but during good times, you collect revenue.
And pay back what you
yes.
spent.
Well, he felt, and he, of course, did not run in 68, but he felt there'd be more of a middle-class uprising if taxation was actually raised in 1968. So what happened was that he kind of went over budget. One contention is that they could afford two of the three, and the three are the Vietnam War, the Cold War is general, and the Cold War is general, and the Great Schism Society programs that he was doing at that time. And supposedly he spent twice as much on the Great Society programs as on the Vietnam War. However, I think, when you yourself just do a little bit extra spending, that can do it. So he probably should have not Vietnam.
You mean throw them into debt?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so we were sort of, the United States was sort of really off balance. The oil embargo of 1973 is really when the recessionary thing started. But people in the early 70s were kind of afraid what was going on. So in 1971, the Nixon administration went off the gold standard, and a lot of people in Europe weren't happy about that because they said, "Well, we'd like to be paid in gold for our debt or something backed by gold," instead of just your American money for what you owe us. But now, there's a term called Reaganomics. The exact term happens to be monetarism. And monetarism is high. It sort of goes against Keynesianism in a way. Mm-hmm. But one could say that the Reagan administration brought down the inflation.
Mm-hmm.
That the Carter administration was not able to really deal with. I don't think they really, I'll just say that I'll give them maybe a credit for that, the Reagan administration. And things really sort of got, it was, I mean, I guess it got out of that recessionary period of the 1980s. During the 1990s, there was the... But the internet bubble thing, because the internet was new, and I think there was a bit of a bubble burst from that. But during the 90s, supposedly things were getting better. But the inflation thing, we really didn't get inflation until just a few years ago. Arguably from the early 80s to about a few years ago, we didn't really have, inflation really wasn't a contention. So then we had the great recession that was caused by, I think, George W. Bush wanted everybody to own a house. And, do you know the exact term for that? It was the sub-mortgage.
Subprime mortgages.
Subprime.
Yeah, it was a fast-expanding housing market combined with subprime mortgages, which is mortgages where the money's lent out to people who wouldn't get an ordinary loan, and somewhat, powered by the idea that people would make loans, banks and institutions would make loans to folks and make some money doing that. And the traditional way of doing these loans is you loan people money and then they pay it back to you, to that institution. And they would package up a whole bunch of loans and sell them to someone else. So the people making the loans weren't really too worried about how well people could pay back, because they were just going to sell the loan to someone else.
Right.
And it wasn't going to be their problem anymore. And I guess you'd ask yourself, why were other folks buying a whole bunch of poor quality loans? But that's, you know, that's a different question I can't really answer.
There was also a bit of an increase in oil prices in early 2008. I think mm-hmm. that was part of it. Now, we can perhaps give credit to the Obama administration at this point that it dealt with these issues. Maybe mm-hmm. not as well as they could have, or they did as well as could be expected. One thing was that the Glass-Steagall, during it's sort of an act that was done during the Franklin Roosevelt administration.
Actually, during the Depression.
Yes, but Alan Greenspan, was that the chairman of the Federal Reserve in the 1990s?
Yeah.
He stopped it. He ended it.
Mm-hmm.
And some people feel that by him ending that regulation, that was part of the cause.
Do you remember what that regulation did?
What it did was it kind of divided commercial banking from, like, you know, like you're a commercial banking for businesses, and then there's one for, like, you go
right.
for home.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I remember now. Basically, you know, commercial banks, regular banks, weren't allowed to sort of speculate in more high risk investments because they were doing so with depositors' money, as opposed to, say, a finance bank, which is mostly dealing with finances and securities and stuff like that. And they were allowed to do the sort of more creative and high risk stuff because they didn't want the regular bank, the Main Street bank, to be suddenly brought down by some bad investments and lose everybody's money, all its depositors' money, regular folks who are just, you know, using the bank to run their life. Anyway,
the Obama administration in place something like Glass-Steagall. It's not the exact regulation, but they have put in place something that is like it. So mm-hmm. we can maybe give credit to the Obama administration for dealing with some aspects of the trouble. So we come to the Trump administration, the first one. Now, there is an argument that they got employment back up. In fact, some people were arguing until before COVID happened, they were getting it back to the late 60s numbers as far mm-hmm. as economic improvement.
Right.
Well, how do you feel about that, Magnus, just to maybe get your view on that?
You know, I think yes and no. I mean, I think, yeah, there were definitely strong employment numbers. You know, unemployment was down at real lows, and labor participation, which is how much of the population is actually out there working for wages and stuff, was pretty high. I mean, I still think there was definitely, you know, problems in the sense that I think a lot of people weren't feeling they were getting ahead, right? You know, a lot of regular middle-class folks and young people coming out of school and stuff and hoping to get into being able to buy a home and stuff. I think those problems were already present. And then, of course, we had the pandemic, which brought everything to a halt, and then the inflation that came after that. And that really brought all those, or maybe exacerbated those kind of problems. It made it much more obvious that, you know, because one of the things I find sort of about the economy right now is it's kind of doing pretty well, broadly, the economy, but regular folks aren't really feeling it that way. You know, the economy's doing well, but regular folks aren't feeling like they're benefiting from that. They still feel like they're struggling, whether it's through housing costs or inflation or rents or whatever. Anyway, so.
Okay, so part of the, we're talking about 2016. People felt that the Trump administration could bring something good. And some people argue that it did happen
yeah.
that way. And that's perhaps why there was a number of people for this past election. They felt something did good happen under the Trump administration. It wasn't happening so well under the Joe Biden administration. That could be a partial explanation why he got certain numbers. Now, what was interesting about the 2020 election, I'm going to go just history of popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
In 2020, Donald Trump got a bit over 74 million.
Yeah.
He actually went down about 2 million for this time around, mm-hmm. to 72 million. Now, Joe Biden got a bit more than 81 million of the popular vote.
Yeah.
And I already forgot her name.
Kamala Harris.
Is it? a bit above 68 million.
Yeah.
Now, in 2016, Trump got a bit over 62 million popular vote, and Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, 65 million. And it's interesting. I'm just going to go by the Obama numbers, which the ones that he won. In 2008, he got 69 million to the 59 million of the other one, Republican, and 65 million in 2012 to 60 million. So in many ways, there seems like a voting block for Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
in a way that sort of stayed. And I suppose there were a lot of, it also is that there's many people who were eligible to vote but did not vote in this year as voted for Donald Trump, basically, for this election. So it's kind of, and 72 and 68 are kind of close numbers in a way. I mean, they're not the closest, but so it's sort of like in, you get of the people eligible to vote, one third did decide not to vote, one third voted for Trump, and the one voted for Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
So there is a polarization as we had in this province too.
Well, it's interesting those numbers you bring up because, you know, I've heard the number of, you know, how many fewer people voted for Kamala Harris than voted for Biden last time. But it's interesting when you sort of read out all those numbers, it seems like, you know, to some extent, the really big numbers for Biden were a bit of an anomaly. You know, he got way more than either candidate did in 2016, and way more than, you know, Obama was getting in earlier.
Yes.
It makes me wonder if one of the things working in his favor was people's reaction to the first Trump term, and they say, oh my God, we can't go through that again. Now, 4 years later, they've kind of forgotten about that.
Well, I think maybe it was they didn't like Trump's response to COVID. And they also brought the base. They said, look, we sat at home and let him become president. You got to come out now and prevent it from happening.
And obviously that wasn't working this time. Cause,
yeah, it was, know, surprisingly.
Because you think only 4 years, you think people would remember what a gong show that seemed to be at the time. And, you know, in my opinion, it sort of seems like we're going to, it's going to be another gong show. Hopefully one that doesn't end in, you know, worse, you know, something much worse than, you know, the insurrection of January 6th.
Right? Well, this is another thing, is that I kind of thought his present campaign of this year was going a bit off the rails because, you know, giving you fries from McDonald's, singing YMCA for a bit too long.
For like 40 minutes. People, you know, insulting a big chunk of the voting, you know, Puerto Ricans and the
Latinos. Well, that was quite serious. Yeah, that was
quite serious.
Yeah,
that one, there is the bit about, you know, I'm going to protect women whether they like it or not. You know, I mean, all those sort of one misstep after another right in the closing week and a half of the campaign. And it obviously did not hurt him.
There seems to be a block Trump voter, which interestingly goes up from in 2020 from 2016, because the popular vote in 2016 for Trump is 62 million, and it goes to 74 million in 2020.
Yeah.
Which means there was true polarization even more so in 2020. Now, so do you think anything good will come from this 4 years of Trump yourself, Magnus?
Well, I think, you know, one thing that's going to be, and initially this might not be good, but one thing that's different about this term, it seems, than the last term is, of course, when he came in last time, he brought a lot of, you know, people with experience in government, people who'd been cabinet members before, and, you know, they'd all worked at that level before, but, you know, a lot of those people were either offended or and kicked out, or they saw what was happening and don't want to be part of it again. And many of them, you know, in this last months of the campaign, you know, spoke out negatively about Trump and their experience working with him in the White House. So this new, you know, this new administration is going to be a lot more, people without that kind of experience in government, and often it seems people who, you know, have views that are quite extreme, you know. I mean, they say that, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is going to be, you know, in charge of, you know, the Health and Human Services, which includes, I believe, the FDA and stuff, you know, and he's anti-vax, he's got a lot of sort of crazy ideas. You know, he posted, it was a tweet today, that all the things he was going to get rid of. And, you know, some of it was like just anti-Big Pharma. Maybe that's not so terrible. But then he gets to the end and it's like, anybody who's opposed to any of this stuff, meaning people within that government department, experts and stuff, if you don't like it, you know, get the hell out, you know. Save all your information and get out, you know. So if they clear out all the force out a lot of experienced quality people and replace them with people who, frankly, probably don't quite know what they're doing, and you know, that could be fairly disastrous. This idea of these tariffs, everybody knows that if they slap on all these tariffs, it's going to be terrible for trade. So, I mean, it could be where, because there's, you know, the term they often use, you know, adults in the room, like experienced people who kind of know what the impact of some of these policy changes are going to be. And, you know, we're restraining Trump to, you know, last time, aren't going to be there. Maybe they'll just do some crazy stuff and they'll be, you know, there'll be some real negative impacts, and that'll cause another big correction the other way.
Well, what I hear our station too. So I hear, I hear also Rebel News podcast and so on. So their kind of thinking is that what they describe as the climate change nonsense is out the window with the Trump administration, which they feel is sort of positive. Mm-hmm. And we'll come to that some other day. I'm just going to present that some people feel in the first administration that that's why there was an economic recovery. He wasn't sort of pandering to climate change regulations or so on. But that's part of it. I won't kind of go further about opinions
that, but just to sort of finish up here, you know, again, with those numbers, you know, that you mentioned, how, you know, for everybody, for both candidates, you know, they took a big jump in the number, you know, the number of people voting. You know, they got more votes, each of them, than anybody got before.
In 2020.
You know, making me think that one thing that might have been happening there was a big reaction to those 4 years. People who didn't like Trump came out in numbers, you know, to oppose him in the voting box. His own supporters came out as well to support him. And, you know, Trump's voters came out this time to support him. Democrat voters, it seems, did not. But maybe that's what will happen next time. After another 4 years, people are going to, oh, my God, we can't let this carry on.
It's J.D. Vance you got to worry about, who I I dislike more than Donald Trump is J.D. Vance, actually.
Yeah. I know he's sort of, some people talk about him as the heir apparent, but he seemed, despite them getting elected, he seemed kind of a flop as a candidate. You know, not very appealing and seemingly lots of negatives. I mean, maybe he'll learn to be a better candidate by next time. Who knows?
Well,
and of course, he appears to have the backing of some pretty powerful people who wanted him to be in there.
I mean, J.D. Vance.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of had that thinking previously to the results of the election. Unfortunately, I think he may have helped him out. I mean, this is what the base is all about that they have. I mean, so I don't know. I mean, and Trump could die in office. We're stuck with that person as president, which is not very good.
Yeah. So an interesting 4 years ahead of us.
Too interesting. Anyway.
Yes, I agree.
It could be.
You know,
be
that curse of may you live in interesting, or, you know, yeah, the curse of may you live in interesting times. I think we're in for some interesting times.
Well, it could
and
be.
And it may not be fun.
Okay, we'll see. Well, I'll comment later on certain aspects in
all right,
later
well,
shows.
We got 4 years to talk about this.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Peter. All right, let's get back to our programming. You're listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM.
About up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, I have the perfect show for you. Come hang out with me at Raccoon City every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Hope to see you there.